right now, I'm standing in a hole. A 300-foot deep hole, to be exact. But even though I'm down here, I'm still connected to the entire job site because I have the new Sprint Direct Connect with apps like Workforce Locator that lets me know my foreman, Mike, is...
Yeah, I'm here.
And I have 3 times the coverage, so I know that my most important delivery...
Just arrived.
And as part of the fastest push-to-talk, I can assemble my team the moment I need them. Guys?
On our way.
So now I can focus on turning this hole into a hotel.
Upgrade to the new Dunn. The new Sprint Direct Connect with 3 times the coverage and access to the fastest push-to-talk experience nationwide. Now when you buy one Motorola Admiral Rugged smartphone for $49.99, you'll get one free. To upgrade, call 800-SPRINT-1 or visit a Sprint store near you. Offer ends 1/10/13. Offer available to corporate liable accounts. Excludes taxes. 2-year agreement. $36 activation. Up to $350 early termination fee for devices. Fastest claim based on initial setup time for push-to-talk calls originating in Nextel or Sprint-owned 3G coverage. Coverage claim based on comparison of Nextel National Network square miles to Sprint National Network inclusive of roaming. Restrictions apply. See store.
What's your plan B? Is what you're doing taking you toward or away from your goals? Are you fulfilled? You can start over. The past is the past. This is a revolution of hope. We provide a way for extra income part or full time with a mission and vision of hope designed to inspire. This is the greatest movement on earth. Make a commitment to yourself and ask, what do you want your life to be like? Join us in our revolution of hope. Go to tellmeplanb.com or call 803-431-0775.
And now, the show that covers politics from all angles, Inside Politics with David Califf.
Inside Politics with David Califf, the show that covers issues that affect you. And hope everybody's having a great Thursday evening. We're going to wind up before we get into tonight's show. There's a couple of elections coming up in this November, upcoming election this year, and a race for governor in Virginia. And the race, of course, one of the Republican side is Cusinelli. And Nelly is one of the Republican candidates who made a comment just earlier today that health insurance shouldn't cover doctor's visits. I'm not making this up. And this guy's the lieutenant governor of Virginia. We know it's easy for you to say, Ken, you have government health care. You've had it for the last 7 years as the lieutenant governor of Virginia. And why? I mean, I'm pretty sure your health cover, your government care, covers doctor's visits, just as should private insurance. If you don't cover doctor's visits, what's the point of having insurance? But tonight, immigration reform, and immigration reform passed.
David?
Yes,
David? Can we just go back to the Virginia governor's race for a second?
Sure. Well, let me get into this intro, and we'll get right to it.
Okay.
But first start off, tonight's show is about immigration reform, and it passed in the Senate just a couple weeks ago with bipartisan support, including 15 Republicans. And now it's up to the radical Tea Party-led House, which not only have they not put up the Senate immigration bill for a vote, they want to strip it all together and put their own bill, thus immigration reform. And one of the things they keep pushing is border security and deportation. Even though we have a record low number of deportations, and border security, it's about as tight as it's ever been, yet they want to focus on that. And every time the Republican Party has been appeased, we've now added 40,000 border agents to the bill. We've now added billions and billions of dollars to the bill. Now they don't mind spending billions more when it comes to more border security. We've made concessions. The Democrats have, I'd say we, but the Democrats have made concessions, concession after concession, and it's not enough for them. They want more, more, and more. Now they're saying it has to be 100% secure, knowing that no border is 100% secure, no matter what country you name. and this is an economic issue as well. With the broken immigration system, there's two new reports out, one from the economic office of the president that says that passing immigration reform will add $700 billion in economic development over the next 10 years, increasing GDP by 3.3%. And the Center for Taxation and Economic Policy states that if the state and local governments add $2 billion over the next decade or two as well. So we've already added all the demands that the Republican Party has put. Now they want more and more and more. They're always lifting the goals. And on the heels of these two reports shows that this is also an issue for the economy. But it seems like today's party rather than helping the economy. Joining us to discuss this topic is Mr. Stuart Acuff. He's an activist. And hello, Stuart. Thanks for joining us live on Inside Politics.
Hey, great. Thank you for having me on. Sorry to interrupt your opening, but I just wanted to mention that there's also this huge scandal that has emerged in Virginia with the current governor, Bob Arnold, using a state credit card for private purchases, borrowing corporate jets for personal reasons, his wife buying most expensive shoes you can imagine, and just two cozy relationships with major corporations. Surprise, surprise, surprise. Why would they not be taking care of the people's business? And I think it has a lot to do. And Cuccinelli is implicated in the scandal as well, and I think it's a sign, it's a symbol of the disdain Tea Party Republicans have for government and for the people's business and the people's money, and it's gonna. Virginia is not a red or a blue state, purple state. President carried it twice, and people have said Terry McAuliffe, who's a Democratic candidate, is going to have a tough time winning there. And before this scandal, I thought he would have a tough time beating Cuccinelli, but with this scandal, I think it's going to really turn off an awful lot of moderate, independent, and suburban voters.
And I think Cuccinelli is such a right-wing ideologue that it opens up for any Democratic candidate, especially with comments like he made regarding health insurance as well. But speaking of right-wing ideologues, the House has become so... I mean, the Senate, we know with the filibuster, the Republicans, even though they have a minority in the Senate with the filibuster, but in the House, the Republicans have a majority, and many of them are run by the Tea Party. And they pretty much obstructed everything. And now with immigration reform, it passed the Senate, bipartisan, members of both parties, and there were compromises made with the Gang of Eight. Now it heads to the now it's at the House, and not only are they killing immigration reform, they want to put up a whole new bill.
Yeah, I know, and they want to say, no conference committee. They don't want to pass one bill in one House and one in the other, and then mediate the two bills or negotiate the two bills, saying no House committee. I don't know how any bicameral two-house legislature can work if there's no conference committee. I mean, each House has its own leadership. Each House has its own ideologues. Each House has its own sponsors and its own committee chairs, and I don't know how they expect to pass, although they don't obviously expect to pass an immigration bill. What they're trying to do, which is not going to work, is they're trying to have it both ways. They're trying to say to their base, look, we're on your side, we're not giving you an inch on immigration. They're trying to say to people who they Oh, yeah, we tried to pass immigration, but the Democrat wouldn't let us. And
that's one of the slimiest...
It's short-sighted to me.
Well, you're right, and that's one of the slimiest things about it. I heard a Republican some shows yesterday actually say that it's the Democrats that are obstructing it. I mean, that's how low they will go, that not only are they killing the Senate bill, then they have the nerve to blame Democrats for killing immigration. Well, it passed a Democratic-controlled Senate.
Right. That's exactly right. In your opening, you're exactly right. It's ridiculous to talk about more border security. For one thing, people aren't flooding into the United States because of our economic crisis. For another, we are deporting more and more people. But the Republicans don't have an idea. Not a single idea will help immigrants or Latinos or Asians or Africans or anybody else, immigrants to this country. They don't have one idea. They don't support the DREAM Act or the children of immigrants who were raised here and who want to get a college education here. They don't support their citizenship. They don't even, as far as I can tell, a pathway to legalization in the House. I think they did the Senate because the Chamber of Commerce wants to use immigrants as a cheap source of labor. But this is crazy. It's ridiculous. And it's like, how much of the growing population of the United States can you turn off for a generation? They have a huge problem on their hands. A huge, huge problem on their hands. And it's going to lead over time to a significant realignment of political parties in America, and perhaps to a new party that is more moderate and less Tea Party-ish. But they're not going to take power with this Tea Party bunch, not on any kind of a grand scale. And you know, somebody in the Congress is going to have to fall on their sword. They're going to have to be willing to be primaried and perhaps be defeated in a primary election and say, folks, we just ain't going this way, because every step they make in that direction is a the implosion of the Republican Party.
Yeah, I hope they keep imploding. And you know, there's two new reports that come out. The first one states that this is a huge economic issue, and we know they've done nothing, the House, to try to help the economy. $730 billion over the next 10 years, increasing gross domestic product by 3.3%. And then the other report talks about how it's going to help state and federal governments. We know how much they've been complaining about how much money they have, by $2 billion over the next 10 years. So this is a huge economic for boosting the economy and putting more money into the economy, more people having spending money, wages going up. Right now, so many undocumented workers are being underpaid. And then with state and federal governments, more people paying into the tax system, because right now, you have millions of undocumented workers that are being paid under the table, not paying into the tax system. So this is also, they're always talking about deficits and budgets. This is a budget deficit issue and also economic issue.
It absolutely is. Undocumented immigrants legal immigrants as well, are a huge part of our economy, particularly at the lower rung. recognize not that easier is frankly, it's economic treason, and we've talked about that on this show before. But you know, I don't see anything that Republicans are doing that is doing anything to turn the economy around. In fact, just the opposite. It's doing everything to drive the economy deeper into the ditch. Whether that's investing in America, whether that's passing immigration reform, you know, whether that's all but outlawing unions, whether that's cutting off, increasing the minimum wage. I'll tell you this little tidbit I read this morning. One of the Koch brothers is now saying that the minimum wage is a detriment to poor people, but the minimum wage keeps poor people down. And it's just nuts. It's sad, and it's hurting our country, and it's better hurt the country worse than those worse.
Yeah, I heard that as well. I guess, there's no way to help poor people better than eliminating the minimum wage, where employers are required to give $7.25 an hour. There's no way better to help them because now employers can pay them $1.25 an hour, 25 cents,
right,
instead of $7.25.
Exactly.
So I guess using his logic, that's the way it helps them.
Yeah. Well, there's no logic there. There's no truth there. There's no honesty there. It's all me, the country is for me, and to heck with the rest of you. And again, it's like Puccinelli saying, healthcare shouldn't include doctor's visit. How crazy is that? It's unbelievable.
And then we know they keep talking about deficit reduction and how we need to that needs to be the focus, austerity, yada yada yada. But then when you look at what immigration reform would do, according to the CBO, the Congressional Nonpartisan Congressional Budget Office, it would cut the deficit by almost $1 trillion over the next 2 decades. $1 trillion.
Yeah, by capturing those taxes and capturing those payments to state, local, and the federal government. Absolutely.
And that it cuts $1 trillion. It will cut the deficit by $1 trillion without cutting one program that helps children, one program that helps single moms, one program that helps the elderly. I mean, imagine this. That's helping the deficit without any austerity that they want to do.
That's right. That's exactly right. It's unbelievable.
And then
totally unbelievable.
And then also Social Security. It would increase Social Security revenues over the next couple decades by $300 billion, adding a couple years to the solvency of Social Security.
Wow. I did not realize that. That's great.
Because you'd have millions.
That is important.
Because right now you have millions of workers who are being exploited by employers here in the U.S. under the table. And if you pass immigration reform, where they have the provisional status, even while they wait to get the citizenship, they're going to have the worker protections, and they'll be paying into Social Security and Medicare, thus adding hundreds of billions of dollars into Social Security. We haven't even talked about Medicare yet.
Yep, exactly right. Doesn't make any sense in any way you look at it, in any shape, form, or fashion. Doesn't even make sense for their self-interest. That's what's crazy to me. I mean, you know, Karl Rove is not a stupid guy. He's got to be over there shaking his head and what in heck are we doing here? Karl Rove and the other guys, it really is the tail wagging the dog. The few Tea Partiers wagging the rest of the party. Because, be wrong-headed. They may be mean. They may be uncaring. But Republican leadership in the House and Senate are not stupid. And they've got to be saying, oh, my Lord, what are we doing to our future? I mean, you know, last week it was the Voting Rights Act. This week it's... And most people in Washington thought that immigration reform was a given, was a natural, that they might well decide to anger African Americans because they've been doing that for a long time. But they wouldn't dare push away Latinos, but they certainly are.
And now the new talking point is, well, they're not going to vote for us anyway. They've almost given up. I guess I'll just try to cheat through gutting voter protection.
Right.
It's almost like you hear the new talking point with many conservative pundits and conservative politicians is, we're not going to get their vote, even if we pass immigration reform, so why pass immigration reform? So it's almost like they've given up on a segment of voters that is the fastest growing population in the United States.
And that's a great thing. I'm so glad that they have.
It's a good thing.
It's great for the future of the country. It's great for America. It's great for social justice in America. It's great for economic justice in America. It's a good thing that they have given up. But it does seem like they have. Now, what they're not, when they say that, what they're not calculating is, for instance, you take a state like Virginia, which we were talking about just a few minutes ago. Well, all of Northern Virginia are smart, suburban, moderate federal employees. Not all of them, but for the most part, federal employees. And it's going to be hard for them to bring themselves to vote for a party that doesn't believe in science, that denies science, a party that enacted the sequester, a party that has done everything to frustrate economic growth in America, and a party that wants to create a permanent underclass of undocumented immigrant workers.
And then what's hilarious is when then on November 7th or 6th or whatever day after the election, then they wonder, oh, why did we lose this particular voting block? Why did we lose this particular voting block? It's because of what you did those 4 years or between presidential elections and those 2 years between the midterms.
Yeah, exactly. You're exactly right, David. You pushed and pushed and pushed people away. And you know what's interesting? You can watch news shows on television, and former RNC chair, former African-American Lieutenant Governor of Maryland, while I'm blanking on his name, he'll say the same thing, that, you know, we're just pushing too many people away, and the trick to politics is addition, not subtraction.
That's true. And right now, they're subtracting more and more voters with every election. And immigration reform is a huge example. And what they're trying to do is come up for reasons to kill it without coming out with the real reason. The real reason is they don't want to fix this immigration system. They want to keep things the way it is. They don't care about helping millions of undocumented workers, millions of families from being broken up. They call this some family values, but they're not family values at all. Look at Mark Sanford.
Right.
And, you know, when you look at these guys, and some gals, but mostly guys, these Republicans with immigration reform, they're willing to not fix a system that would benefit Americans in every single way, whether it's local and state governments with added revenues, whether it's the federal government with decreasing the deficit by over $1 trillion, whether it's strengthening tax revenues at state and national levels, whether it's strengthening Social Security and Medicare, whether it's giving millions of undocumented workers protections and not being exploited by their employers and some corporations, including our farm workers who pick our fruits and vegetables, or breaking up the Dreamers, giving sons and daughters of these parents who graduate from college or join the military, and you know they didn't cross over because of themselves. Their parents crossed over. Many of them were babies, right, or infants. The Dreamers, providing them protections. I mean, down the road, it's good for the economy. It's good for the 11 million undocumented immigrants and their families. It's good for social programs, tax revenues. It makes sense. And their little border security that they keep talking about is strengthened already. They're already adding 400,000 border 40,000 border security agents from the Senate bill. And billions of dollars in border security, by the way, at a time when we have our lowest number of people that are deporting, I mean, that are crossing the border, and highest number of people that are being deported.
Right. And the magic fence. They got the magic fence, remember?
Yeah, and their drones on U.S. soil.
Right. It's just crazy. It's very, very sad.
It's unbelievable. They're doing... And I heard Ann Coulter say that, no, not Ann Coulter, Michelle Malkin, say, conservative author and whack job, say that the number one job of the government is to secure the borders. We've secured the borders. No, the number one job of Congress is doing the job of the people, and Congress isn't doing
right.
It, Michelle.
That's exactly right. Exactly right.
I think we're just going to keep punching away at these people on immigration reform. But as always, it's been a pleasure, Stuart, and breaking down this topic. And
thank you, David. I'm a little bit sick last time I was on, but I feel much better now. And thank you, as always, for letting me on, letting me be on with you. And I look forward to the next time we get a chance to talk.
Same here. It's been a pleasure, and look forward to next week.
Okay.
And we're about to head into a commercial break, but yeah, when you look at immigration reform, the people that don't want to pass immigration reform, their reasoning is debunked every single time. Whether it's we need that $1 billion at a time or for added security, we're going to add. And on top of that, adding they wanted thousands more border agents, 40,000 border security agents. They've met every single demand. The Democrats have met every single demand that they've had for immigration. And despite all these demands, in the House, they want more demands. It's because they don't want to solve this problem. They don't care about solving immigration reform. They want to keep using it as a political issue in elections. And that's a shame. We're about to head into a commercial break. You're listening to Inside Politics. We'll be right back after this commercial break.
And now.
Right now, I'm standing in a hole, a 300-foot deep hole to be exact. But even though I'm down here, I'm still connected to the entire job site because I have the new Sprint Direct Connect with apps like Workforce Locator that lets me know my foreman, Mike, is...
Yeah, I'm here.
And I have 3 times the coverage, so I know that my most important delivery...
Just arrived.
And as part of the fastest push-to-talk, I can assemble my team the moment I need them. Guys?
On our way.
So now I can focus on turning this hole into a hotel.
Upgrade to the new Dunn. The new Sprint Direct Connect with 3 times the coverage and access to the fastest push-to-talk experience nationwide. Now when you buy one Motorola Admiral Rugged smartphone for $49.99, you'll get one free. To upgrade, call 800-SPRINT-1 or visit a Sprint store near you.
Offer ends 1/10/13. Offer available to corporate liable accounts. Excludes taxes. 2-year agreement. $36 activation. Up to $350 early termination fee for devices. Fastest claim based on initial setup time for push-to-talk calls originating in Nextel or Sprint-owned 3G coverage. Coverage claim based on comparison of Nextel National Network square miles to Sprint National Network inclusive of roaming. Restrictions apply. See store.
What's your plan B? Is what you're doing taking you toward or away from your goals? Are you fulfilled? You can start over. The past is the past. This is a revolution of hope. We provide a way for extra income, part or full-time, with a mission and vision of hope designed to inspire. This is the greatest movement on earth. Make a commitment to yourself and ask, what do you want your life to be like? Join us in our revolution of hope. Go to tellmeplanb.com or call 803-431-0775.
You are listening to Inside Politics with David Caleb, the show that covers the issues that affect you. Hope everybody's having a great Thursday evening. Before we get back into this Thursday show, the GOP tried to ram through a farm bill. Well, I remember that humiliating defeat they had a week or two ago. The GOP is trying to push in through a farm bill and actually passed in the House, but no chance of passing the Senate or the President's desk, that calls for no funding. No funding for food stamps. Totally takes out the food stamp SNAP program from the farm bill, and I guess they're letting it be known that they don't care about this program at all, including just taking out all the funding altogether. And for the millions and millions of Americans who rely on the SNAP program to feed either themselves or their families, the GOP message from this week: you're on your own. But tonight, it's all about Walmart, and we know Walmart has a history of fighting against higher wages and worker protections for their workers and employees. And this week, in the Washington, D.C. area, Walmart is threatening to walk away, close down three Walmart locations in the Washington, D.C. area, and they fought hard to get Walmart in the Washington, D.C. area. And the D.C. City Council is trying to propose a living wage bill to raise the wages for companies, corporations making over $1 billion in sales to $12.50 an hour. And as usual, whenever it comes to trying to raise the wages, even by a couple of dollars for their workers, Walmart throws a fit, and Walmart is throwing a fit here in Washington, in the Washington, D.C. area. And they have a history of this 7 years ago in Chicago. And in New York, we've seen similar tantrums by them. And it's not just Walmart that would have to pay their workers more. Costco, which already is paying employees more. Target and other corporations and companies that are making over $1 billion in sale. But Walmart thinks they're above everybody else, and it's okay for them to step over the American worker. And on top of that, the Washington Times put out a piece, another hit job against raising the living wage. And we've seen the conservative media and the GOP love to attack raising the minimum wage, and usually with false information. And tonight we're going to talk about some of that false information, some of those myths. Joining us tonight to discuss this topic is Mr. Albert Klein. He's a senior economic researcher at Media Matters. And hello, Albert. Thanks for joining us live on Inside Politics.
Thanks so much for having me.
Oh, it's a pleasure, and you're with Media Matters. And for our listeners, a little bit about your role with Media Matters.
So, basically, what I do with Media Matters is I take a look at all the footage that's coming in from the conservative media, looking at Fox and Times of Financial Networks. We just take a look at all the conservative media in print and see what they're pushing forth and the kind of lies that they use to push forth the agenda. And, of course, conservative media absolutely loves Walmart because they absolutely love the GOP, and the GOP absolutely loves Walmart as well.
Yeah, they'll defend Walmart at all costs. And for listeners, this seems to be a huge story in the D.C. area and nationally. The D.C. City Council proposing put more information just for our listeners, raising a living wage to $12.50 an hour?
Correct. And they actually passed last night. I was in the middle of writing an article about something that Fox did, which I'll get into in just a minute, and the council just passed it to the mayor whether or not he's going to veto it. And so they proposed this last week is when it really hit the papers. And immediately right afterwards, on July 9th, a representative from Walmart wrote an opinion piece in the Washington Post that you know, sent that threat of we're going to stop construction of three stores, and we're going to end all operations at three existing stores that are still under construction. So, layers of discussion with Walmart doing here. First, apparently, when they wooed the D.C. City Council into giving them planning permission to build these locations, they had assured them that they were going to pay all their workers and they were the power. Now, when the D.C. City Council tried to make them deliver on that, they threatened. And secondly, the problem that we have is there's quite a lot of information coming out about this. Last night on Fox News, they had a panel of guests on to talk about why the D.C. City Council wants to refuse these types of jobs. And they basically say, you know, this is the move on the City Council. It's the move that's saying, you know, a big screw you to the unemployed in D.C. and people looking for jobs because they're holding back from jobs. Now, if you take a look at actual economic evidence, which, you know, is never a friend at Fox News, if you take a look at that, it shows that counties that have Walmart have experienced net declines in retail employment. The reason for that is maybe in the short term, Walmart will bring a whole bunch of jobs to the area, but in the long term, the medium and long term, you take a look, and what ends up happening is local stores, all businesses, which are the primary creator of jobs, have to close down, and they lose their retail workers. Walmart hires much fewer retail workers per sale than a small business. So, yes, in the short run, there might be a quick boost in jobs, which I guess will get you reelected if you play your cards right. In the long run, it's not very good for the economy. The other part is that they rail against this as an anti-poverty measure. The D.C. City Council trying to provide a living wage. And I mean, the thought behind that is that it's kind of odd, considering I don't think anyone could really consider a living wage as a pro-poverty measure, but they say, you know, what they're doing is they're keeping jobs from happening. And, of course, in areas where we have Walmart, we've seen increased levels of family poverty rates and increased reliance on programs like food stamps, which, as you mentioned earlier, might be a problem in the future.
And I've heard that argument. I think there was somebody from the Wall Street Journal I heard it wasn't Fox yesterday, but it was another outlet, and he was mentioning that Walmart has been one of the best methods of getting people out of poverty, one of the best fighters against poverty, even better than any social government program. And I find it laughable, because Walmart, any job they curate, they're not good paying jobs. They're jobs that keep people in poverty.
Yeah, and you're absolutely right. There's been a lot of research done basically looking at the kind of taxpayer subsidization that goes into Walmart paying these low wages. I mean, if you have a family of four and you're working for $8 an hour, you have to rely on government services like Medicaid and food stamps. So, you know, it's incredible that they think that, you know, Walmart brings people out of poverty when they're paying wages that really don't get you a wage, I suppose. They're not really getting you out of poverty at all. And in fact, you know, when we look at economic evidence, and I'm not sure it's been done by anything that have been done by academic economists who, you know, presumably don't have a particular agenda and just try to get the actual thing better. You know, they find an increase in counties that have Walmart. And you know, the reliance on food stamps and on Medicaid and all these government social safety nets that allow Walmart to keep those wages so depressed is soaring. And it's very interesting, because the people who are completely against forcing companies like Walmart to pay living wages are the same people that want to defund programs like food stamps.
And then Walmart, as you mentioned, threatened to close down, I mean, to stop three locations from the D.C. area. And as the city, have you seen the city council voted yes last night? Do you see the mayor came into the pressure from Walmart?
I don't know. It could be very tough to come out. I mean, it depends on how strong the information is on both sides. I mean, if Walmart is getting a nice coordinated push, you know, we had an editorial in the Washington Times, which is, of course, you know, a local paper. They're pushing for it, and, you know, people might not you know, be on board with it. I think there's a lot of pressure on the mayor from a lot of different sources and a lot of different angles to allow this to happen. But at the same time, I mean, living wages are something that are a real problem in this country. I mean, people cannot get by based on what they're getting paid. And, you know, we've seen, if you look at all the evidence over the past, real wages in the economy has stagnated for large percentage. A study put out yesterday that showed that most of the income losses, the wage losses that have happened since the beginning of the economic recovery in 2009 have been for lower wage people. So it's a very important issue. We have to get living wages. And, you know, if people want the GOP and people off food stamps, the best way to do it is provide them with a wage that allows to keep themselves.
Has a history of trying to pressure and these shenanigans. I was reading where in Chicago they did similar shenanigans 7 years ago in Chicago, and so they have a history of trying to pressure city councils from these type of members.
Yeah, I mean, and it's kind of goes back to a much more coordinated move on the right, and, you know, Walmart gets away with saying things like this, not on their own. I mean, they do have quite a lot of bargaining power. They are a very large employer in the United States. But, I mean, think back to when Barack Obama had the gall and the audacity to suggest that to raise the total minimum wage $9 an hour. I mean, I remember the fallout from that. It's a coordinated push on the right. You know, any type of increase in the minimum wage or any measure taken to give people any type of ability to, you know, make ends meet on their own, not relying on government, completely and utterly lambasted by the right. It's incredible. I mean, it's very strange to me that we don't want to give people living wages, and at the same time, we don't want to give them the help they need for not having living wages.
And they love to put the same talking points, Fox and company. One of those is that raising the minimum wage, like you mentioned with President Obama at the State of the Union earlier this year, that raising the minimum wage hurts the economy, it's going to hurt economic recovery.
Well, I mean, that's some beautiful Econ 101. I wish they would graduate up to Econ 201, where you take an actual look at empiric. I mean, yes, I'm an economist by training, and, you know, on the first day of Econ 101, you learn about labor markets. You learn about if you set a floor on the wage that you're able to offer people, yes, might be out of what market dictates, and you know, in that instance, you'll have a rise in unemployment. That's theory, and they haven't graduated from the world of theory to the world of spirit. You know, we have a lot of research on this. There's shown that business activity does not decrease in areas that adopt a minimum wage above the federal minimum wage. In fact, there's studies that show that worker productivity and worker retention increases because you provide a higher minimum wage. I mean, this is all, it's like they opened the book for Econ 101 and didn't open their eyes to what happens in the real world. This is not stuff that has not been researched heavily. I mean, there are plenty of studies out there that show that the Econ 101 theory, the world of you know, minimum wage is causing unemployment, doesn't really exist.
And there's other cities that have raised their minimum wage. Some cities like San Francisco and Portland, Oregon, raised the minimum wage, and it didn't hurt their economies at all. It was quite the opposite.
Well, yeah, I mean, and you know, you see that. I mean, like I said, you know, it increases worker retention, it increases worker productivity, it makes it so that, you know, the turnover, I mean, one of the biggest costs in hiring someone is paying them. And if you can, you know, entice them to stay put by giving them some type of wage that they can actually, you know, live on, then you basically just pay that cost. And another thing that's amazing behind this is that it completely ignores any type of what's going on with the economy. You know, small businesses consistently rate lack of demand for their services and their product as the number one thing holding back this. Not government regulation, it's not taxes, it's lack of demand. Now, they have this worldview where, you know, strain business in any way by, you know, having the audacity to make pay them a living wage, that your business will go under. And the surveys from business owners suggest that, economic evidence, very rigorous academic suggest that, it's all a fantasy world.
And the other talking point is that Walmart's talking point is that it's discriminatory to Walmart?
Well, I mean, if Walmart would get on the ball and allow workers to have collective bargaining rights, maybe I'd be willing to buy that, but they don't. I mean, we see Walmart worker protests happen throughout the year for, you know, problems such as living wages and issues such as, making their workers work on Thanksgiving Eve. I don't know if you remember that from a while back. They basically declared that Black Friday now begins right after you're done eating your Thanksgiving dinner, and workers protest about this. I would be more concerned about discriminating against Walmart if you were working on a level playing field than that.
When they say it's discriminatory, you would think it's just for Walmart only, but there's other companies that are going to have to pay higher wages too, like Target and Costco, and Costco's already doing it.
Well, yeah, I mean, Costco is the greatest counterexample to this Walmart, this nonsense that you hear from Walmart. Well, Costco pays its employees' living wages. You know, they have great employee retention, and look, they still turn a profit. They haven't had to shut their doors. And the council, the D.C. City Council, the legislation they passed, it does not apply to Walmart. It applies to companies that have a parent company that spends over $1 billion in revenue annually. It's not a Walmart bill. This is a bill that applies to big box suppliers who are notorious for denying their workers basic human rights.
This other notion that living wage laws increase worker turnover, it's contrary to all the economic studies, as you could point out to you, that it actually helps with worker turnover.
Yeah, I mean, look, one of the greatest things, there's been a general shift in the country in the way that at least offices operate, where employee retention is key. Like I said before, training an employee is a very expensive task. And if you can make it so that your employees want to stay, you will do that. And one of the best ways of doing that is providing them with a wage that they're not constantly looking elsewhere to figure out how to work. And, you know, I mean, your employees will probably be more productive. I imagine the reason why they won't have to be working back in the house, they won't be completely stressed out about whether they're going to find their next meal or how they're going to make rent. You know, it's good for employees in the short run by providing a minimum wage, and I imagine that it's good for employers in the long run.
And it's putting more money into the economy. You raise wages for workers, and that's more money they have in their wallets, more money in their purses to spend into the local economy.
Well, yeah, and that's one of the big problems that we have right now is, like I said, lack of demand. People who are earning income at the bottom of the spectrum are ones that spend their money immediately. If you're making $20,000 a year, you don't have the option to save. And it's either the extra $1,000 you get will go right back into the economy. And, you know, yes, maybe profit margins will be reduced, but if you take a look at what's holding the economy back, big businesses are not investing. They're sitting on trillions of dollars of reserves. This would be a great way to unlock that capital, put it in people's pockets, allow them to feed themselves, not relying on government programs to do that, and also, you know, give a nice short stimulus.
And as you mentioned, Walmart is the number one employer right now, and it's good when one of the number one employers in the country is paying lowest wages.
Right, it's, you know, it's what we've seen. It isn't a jobless recovery. I believe it is a recovery job. I mean, the kind of jobs that we're getting are low-wage, part-time jobs. And, you know, the fact that Walmart is the largest employer in the country, and, you know, they all pretty much only represent part-time or part-time for the most part, and low-wage jobs. I mean, this is a really big problem. And if they're not going to regulate themselves, if they're not going to provide people with living wages, you know, it's the job of our politicians and the people that are supposed to be looking out for us to make sure that they're doing that.
And I'm glad that the D.C. City Council decided to raise wages for the Walmarts of the world $12.50 an hour. And as you're right, I think we need this on a national stage. I'm glad the president called for $9, but a lot of people are saying that, you know, I know Elizabeth Warren has talked about $20 to $22 an hour, because you look at the raise in cost of living, cost of goods, inflation. I believe we're at, what, late 1960s levels?
Yeah, somewhere around there. I know the study that she's actually referencing, which she was looking at keeping it. The minimum wage is kept up with productivity gains. the productivity gains in the economy had gone to the workers, where they had gotten that fair share of the productivity gains, the minimum wage would be around $22 an hour. And like I said before, wages are stagnating right now. And part of the reason why wages are stagnating is because, you know, a large share of our economy is driven by minimum wage work or very low wage work. And, you know, byproduct of that is the fact that, you know, the minimum wage has been kept down for such a long time. Now, it's actually tracked where it should be. We see people with $22 an hour, and $22 an hour is not bad. And you can actually make a decent living on that. You know, you're not going to be living high, but you'll be able to get yourself on the, you know, path to.
And that's what built the middle class, was the American worker being able, you know, as you mentioned, not being wealthy, but having enough money to feed their families, send their kids to college, and have enough money to spend into the economy.
Well, it's utterly ridiculous, a very good portion of this country, that you cannot work in retail and make ends. Accepting a job at Walmart means that you're accepting the fact that you will not be able to make ends meet on your own. And that's, it's a shame. And something has to be done about it. The economy is not creating the type of jobs that we need. It's creating these low-wage, part-time jobs, and it really is the responsibility of the government. The government really does care. That is the GOP, you know, likes to say over and over again, there's about fiscal responsibility. Part of fiscal responsibility is making sure that people can take care of the people. Doing that means making sure that companies are providing their employees living wage.
And I was reading, it may have been California, and you might be able to correct me on that one, but where they were discussing proposing tax penalties for Walmart and companies that for a certain amount of money would they go over the threshold of their workers being on government assistance.
I mean, it sounds like a fantastic, look, they rely, like I said before, so many of these low wages are subsidized by taxpayers. If we really care, if you really are a big deficit hawk, low, small government person, this is what you should care about. You should care about the fact that a lot of people who are accepting things like Medicaid and things like food stamps are working. The problem is they're not making enough. What they're doing, it's absolutely ridiculous. You can be a high school or college educated person with a job and not be able to take care of yourself. And the strain on local governments and the federal government is huge because of this. People should take advantage of these programs because they absolutely need them to survive. But the fact of the matter is, they shouldn't have to take advantage of them if they're working.
It's an economic issue that we have to address as a country. This wage gap, income gap between the top CEOs and the workers at the bottom, income immobility, and then a living wage for millions of workers, whether it's Walmart, the fast food industry. This is a topic that we've got to tackle as a country. But Albert, I want to thank you so much for coming on this show. How can people learn more about the work that you're doing at Media Matters?
You check us out at mediamatters.org. If you click on the Issues tab, you'll see Economy. You can learn everything you need to know about the latest right-wing attack on providing people living wages and getting the economy back on track.
And telling the truth about Walmart instead of being a cheerleader like Fox.
Yeah.
But it's been a pleasure, and thanks for coming on.
Thanks so much.
And as our last guest mentioned, this is a issue that has to be tackled, and it's a huge economic issue, and I'm glad that the City Council in Washington, D.C. decided to raise the living wage to $12.50 an hour for any worker that's working for a company that has over $1 billion in sales, and that includes the Targets, Costco's, which Costco's already doing that anyway, other companies like that, but Walmart was on that list. And the one that raised the most fuss, the one that's making the threats, none other than Walmart. And that doesn't surprise us. And there's only three locations in the Washington, D.C. area. And they recently got those, and are proposing those, after years of trying to fight to get in there. I'm glad they're not in some places like New York. But, you know, Walmart threatening to leave because they'll have to pay a couple dollars more for their employees. that says a lot. And that's one of the reasons I don't shop at Walmart. You know, I'm not going to tell you, the listeners, what to do, but one of the reasons I haven't shopped at Walmart in years, I haven't brought something to Walmart in years, and it's stories like this that remind me why I don't shop at Walmart and why I never will. Until they change their practices, until they stop exploiting and taking advantage of the American worker and pay them a fair living wage, quit union busting, quit intimidating the workers, quit intimidating anyone that tries to protest, and quit threatening to leave a city or state if they tell you you have to raise your wages. They're making record profits. They're the number one employer in the United States. They're making great profits. And adding, having to pay their employees $3 or $4 more an hour, it's not going to break them. They're going to do just fine. It's all about greed, and sad, there's too many politicians that have sold out and are in the pockets of corporations like Walmart. Low prices anytime? Yeah, right. But that's it for tonight's show. You can email the show at insidepolitics@theletteryml.com. insidepolitics@theletteryml.com. Until next time, I'm out.